Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business, and on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet. Did you know that the average person's daily spending habits can have a significant impact on the environment? Meet Sanchali Pal, the visionary founder of Commons, an app dedicated to empowering users to make eco-conscious choices in their everyday lives. Drawing from her experience as a former consultant working directly with those affected by the climate crisis, Sanchali recognized the urgent need for a solution that bridges the gap between personal choices and collective environmental impact. Through Commons, users gain access to a powerful tool that converts their everyday spending into a tangible measure of their carbon footprint. With a proprietary algorithm named the Carbonizer, the app provides insights into the environmental impact of everyday purchase and empowering those individuals to make informed decisions that align with their values. And in this episode, we discuss pivoting and adapting based on new strategies and how that can be effective. We talk about building an audience via marketing and how content is so incredibly important. We talk about 15 to 20% of consumers change, but how do you empower decisions for other items that you buy? We talk about greenwashing and skepticism and bringing solutions to solve that. We talk about her experience as a solo founder and the transformative power of aligning financial decisions with environmental values. Get ready to be inspired to make a positive impact one spending choice at a time with Sanchali Pal.
I think that the same principle applies for big choices as for small choices, like should I eat meat today, is sort of you have to think about what's the thing that I can sustain, that I can actually do for the rest of my life and that will make me happy and make life worth living, make it worth living on planet Earth. What's the thing that the Earth can sustain? If everyone in the world lived like me, would the world be a better place?
Welcome to the Someone Like You podcast. I'm very excited to chat with you, Sanchali, from Commons, and we just have lots to discuss today. I think what you've been building, especially in the app ecosystem, and your kind of history and how you kind of got started with building your own kind of Excel sheet to getting into now what is a really, really comprehensive app product. Maybe if we could just kind of take it at the start and kind of why you thought about, you know, spending your time being an entrepreneur, building a platform for kind of carbon footprint.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here. And I think for me, it really started out of a personal interest and curiosity and not being able to find what I needed, being a consumer myself who wanted to live more sustainably and make more sustainable spending choices. I was looking for information that I couldn't find. So I started trying to build that information myself. It really started for me when I was in college, and I saw the documentary Food Inc. And it made me just think more carefully. As I was an economics major, I was like, oh, I'm learning about supply and demand in my classes, but what about my own supply and demand? You know, do my choices matter? Which of my choices matter, if any? And if lots of us changed our choices together, what would the world look like? That's kind of my starting point. And through, I started building my own carbon tracking spreadsheet because I couldn't find the answer to that question. I ended up taking some classes on carbon tracking and ended up building out this kind of detailed model of the emissions of my life, starting with food, and looking at what if I make a change? Like if I cut down my meat consumption by half or by 80% or 90%, what's the result? And if everyone in my dining hall did that, or if everyone in the US did that, how would the world look different? And I started to find some really interesting things, that some of the choices I make are actually super consequential. If I cut my meat consumption down from 12 meals a week having meat to one or two meals a week having meat, I was having an impact like taking half a car off the road every year. And I wasn't even going fully vegetarian. So I started to discover these opportunities for having outsized impact that also were very achievable for me, or in some cases even made my life better.
And then for that kind of initial spark or that idea, because you know, I did the same kind of exercise as well. And I remember, you know, I have three little kids now, and I remember this reading this report of people not having as many kids because of the, especially in North America, the impact that, you know, a child has in terms of the environment, from, you know, buying items to diapers to just the fact that you need to feed them, you need to have to housing and heating and extras, all this kind of stuff. And I was like, oh. Like, this is to think about not being able to potentially have not be able to have a child because of it, but that is a decision or a process starts to make you think about, well, what are all the other things that we have? So how did you kind of make that? What was that first kind of spark in terms of, like, what was the model that you wanted to create? Because it's a bit about education, but then you need to hopefully try to provide options and alternatives for people on the other side. So how did you kind of, what was that first kind of maybe like MVP that you built or thing that you kind of thought of? I was like, let's take my spreadsheet and how do I put this out into the market?
Well, I feel like something you just said is so interesting because that's kind of like an ultimate decision of, do I have a kid or not, is such a huge decision. And a really consequential one that some people, I mean, more people than ever before are starting to think about climate change when they're making that choice. But I think that the same principle applies for big choices as for small choices, like, should I eat meat today? Is sort of, you have to think about, what's the thing that I can sustain, that I can actually do for the rest of my life, and that will make me happy and make life worth living. Make it worth living on planet Earth. What's the thing that the Earth can sustain? If everyone in the world lived like me, would the world be a better place? And then also, what's, like, financially sustainable? I think that's also a really important part of this is, you know, maybe there's something we decide to do, but it's just not possible for us within our means or within our lifestyle. And so that's, I think when we talk about sustainability, to me, that's what it means is, will this sustain me? Will this sustain life on Earth? Is this financially viable or sustainable? And so when I was building out my spreadsheet, those were things I was thinking about in the context of a much smaller decision of just starting with just how should I shape my diet? I ended up building it out for lots of different things across my whole life. And that kind of turned into the Commons app, which now covers anything you spend money on. But I was thinking about tracking, what am I eating? What's the carbon impact of those choices? And then what's the dollar impact of those choices? And what I found was that by cutting down on meat consumption, I was definitely having an impact from a climate perspective. I found a balance for myself that was, now I eat meat one meal a week, and I've been doing that for over a decade. That was really sustainable for me to do over the long run and made my lifestyle happy and enjoyable. And then also saved me money. So I ended up saving several hundred dollars a year by focusing on eating more plant-based meals.
Yeah, and that's a really, really great point about everybody is a little bit different based on all those different factors. Obviously, depending on where you live, your income, your, what you kind of almost said too, is that, you know, you still were able to, what somebody's kind of joy as well in terms of what's sustainable into the future as well. Could they do this over and over and over? You know, sure, maybe you can eat less meat for a week or two, but trying to find that balance. So when you created the Commons app, was it intended to give people insight into what they're purchasing and then also alternative suggestions or ideas? Like, how was that first kind of go-to-market strategy?
Yeah, the idea behind the app was always to help people make these spending choices more sustainably and more confidently in a way that's easy. Because, you know, we have so much information about price. So we're able to make choices that align with our financial goals because we know, you know, something's $100. I understand what $100 means. I can think about how that fits into my overall lifestyle and budget. And when we're trying to make sustainable choices, we don't have that kind of information. We don't know whether something's 1 kg or 100 kgs of CO2. And we don't have a great intuition for what even 100 kgs of CO2 means. So what I was trying to do with starting Commons is help people develop that carbon intuition and get a sense of the information as quickly and easily as possible in a way that's easily applied to to the spending choices we make every day, all of which have carbon implications. And spending is a really useful tool and something that allowed us to automate this, much better than my manual spreadsheet I was working off of, because everything we spend money on has carbon associated with it or takes energy and resources to produce. And through household spending is one of the ways we most influence our global climate trajectory. Besides, voting in elections, one of the biggest things we do every day is spend money, and over 60% of global emissions are influenced directly by household choices on spending. So we actually influence a really big chunk of global emissions through our spending choices. And so the first version of the app allows people to automatically connect their credit and debit cards, see a real-time picture of where their emissions come from, and now, after many years of iteration, actually get guidance on where to shop when you need to buy things and how to buy things better in a way that's better for you and better for the planet.
And in that first iteration, and where is it today in terms of just the business model? Because for getting people to install an app, connect it to credit cards, to review it, to make these changes, like that in my mind as a marketer, like that's something that people are probably interested in doing, but then it does take a lot of work to be able to follow up with it. And I've been there and I've done that before. So how did you kind of go to market with that? And what was kind of that initial business model that would allow you to kind of provide this education and get that interest from those early app users?
I think this is really somewhere we've evolved over the last few years. We launched the app for the first time in April, 2020. And so we've evolved this a lot. I think initially our goal was to be extremely rigorous and try to provide the most automated, most reliable source of carbon data to consumers that existed. And so we really focused on building out robust data sets and algorithms to convert people's purchasing behavior into estimated carbon emissions. That really appealed to a very early adopter audience of people who, like me, had already been curious about what's my carbon footprint, how do I make lower carbon spending choices, and they were eager to see this data about themselves and to be able to use it in their decision making. We found those users were also quite interested in offsetting their emissions because they knew that they couldn't reduce their emissions to zero. No one can. Most on average, we've been finding our users are able to reduce their emissions by about 19 to 20%, which is really exciting and promising. But of course, we can't avoid a lot of the things we need to buy have carbon footprint just because of, living in the US and the sort of high carbon economy that we live in. So the first version of the app was really focused on getting the data right and being a tool that people could trust, and then giving people easy ways to take action on top of that. In the last year or so, we've really shifted our focus to meeting people closer to where they are, where most people are, which is, I'm trying to buy something. How do I buy that thing more sustainably? I may or may not be thinking about the carbon footprint of that thing to start with, but I know, I have to buy clothes, or it's time to renew my utility bill. I'm curious, how can I do that in a more sustainable way and feel confident that that's going to be quantifiably better than what I could do otherwise. And so we've really shifted the app to now help provide people more guidance at the point of purchase, or to be able to reflect on their purchases and understand which companies or brands are more or less sustainable, which types of purchases are more or less sustainable, and actually help people earn rewards when they make those purchases in a way that's lower carbon.
So essentially what you're trying to do is be almost like a layer or a data layer or like a vetting layer for consumers to understand, one, here is your footprint as a consumer. You're connected to your transactions, so we can see that. But more importantly, as if you're using the app, you can get people to that 15 or 20% and potentially obviously more over time. But that bulk of those purchases, the hard ones, what you're trying to say is, if you're going to have to make these purchases, which you do, here is a better place to do it. Is that kind of like an accurate description?
Exactly. Yes. Like we all need to spend money. It's a reality of the world we live in. We need to eat. We need to clothe ourselves. We need to, you know, find joy by going to the movies. There's all sorts of things that we need to do in our lives. Many of those things we can do in a way that's more sustainable. And often those things can either save us money or earn you rewards. And so that's what we're trying to help people do is, if I want to live my life, but I want to do it in a way that's more sustainable, how do I do that?
Yeah. And I think that there was a statement of, you kind of have to meet people at the table, as in people don't want to often pay a lot of the premium for things, or at least they want to basically be able to do the things that they want to be able to do. And hopefully that the brands are able to come to the table with those type of solutions. So you're kind of that bridge. And how does that vetting process, because that seems like another, you know, you went from being an app with really kind of a technology data layer to be able to bring all this in a beautiful way to kind of show people this, but then now you're having to vet and understand who these different kind of partners are to be able to buy through. How has that process kind of changed your business model?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's really exciting is the moment we're in, consumers are really hungry for this information. More people than ever before want to shop sustainably, and we don't trust brands' marketing messages. Yeah. We're tired of getting greenwashed and just, you know, hearing that this is sustainable, but then finding out that it's not. So it can be really frustrating for consumers. And I think especially younger generations of consumers, millennials and Gen Z, are becoming increasingly savvy and aware of when marketing claims are not the same as a company's true sustainability credentials. So from that perspective, I think it's like a really exciting time to be offering this kind of information to users. And also people are starting to rethink how they want to live their lives. Like, what does a good life look like? It no longer means like, I want to be able to buy lots and lots of stuff. It means like, I want to buy the right things for me. I want to buy things that are going to last. I want to buy things that make me happy, that align with my values. And people are becoming aware of like sort of the inundation of advertising. So I think there's a real opportunity to help people craft the kind of life they want to live, you know, buy fewer, better things, save money, find more joy in their things, find for more community, and, you know, actually share things with people around them. So I think from that perspective, it's really exciting. And our job, what we're trying to do is help make it as easy as possible to surface the information that gives people the confidence to make those choices. So some of what we've been doing so far is initially the brands that we've vetted, we've worked with third-party nonprofits and certifications to be able to show brands that are, for instance, truly climate neutral certified, that are measuring, reducing, and offsetting the full emissions of their supply chain, and are doing so with a third-party nonprofit label, not just through their own claims. So looking at publicly available data and third-party credentials has been really important to us. And then also highlighting places where there's clearly business models and approaches that are definitely more sustainable. So things like shopping secondhand instead of shopping new. It kind of doesn't matter where you shop secondhand, but if you buy clothes secondhand versus buying new, that's one of the most impactful things you can do. And then, you know, hopefully we'll try to get more nuanced as time goes on helping people distinguish between the sustainability of online thrifting versus in person in your local community, et cetera. Or we can help reward people when they fill up their car at an electric vehicle charging station, or they use bike share or green public transport, or even book an e-vehicle through a rideshare app. So we're trying to help highlight places where it's really clear that those choices make a really meaningful impact. And then taking a really deliberate and rigorous approach, relying on third-party and publicly available data to provide individual brand ratings and build up that database over time.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it
And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, really incredibly important. And I think a lot of people are asking these type of questions. And I just had an example where we bought a new box of crayons from Crayola. And on the label, it's, you know, all this is made in 100% renewable solar-based plant. And I was like, oh, that's really, really great. And so I kind of looked into it. And then I was watching, weirdly, I think the next day, we watched the show of how crayons are actually made. And of course, the product that they're made out of is a petroleum-based product. And I just kind of then went out to Crayola, look into their sustainability. And it's like, oh, like, you know, yeah, it's made in a sustainable, renewable energy factory. But they're just a kind of ignoring the fact of that the product is made from petroleum. Yeah. And it's, you know, I was like, oh, this labeling is just, it's so crappy, because like as a consumer, I felt good about that. And then as I like, but not everybody's going to be able to do the kind of digging that I did and the kind of connection, because that's kind of where my mind, of course, goes. But what you're trying to do is be able to make that very seamless, very easy for people to understand as they start to consume through different things, different ideas and different options, which seems really powerful.
Yeah, that's such a good example, because I think that's where grounding in the carbon supply chain can be really valuable. And that's where we're trying to help people build that sort of intuition or mental framework for, even if you encounter a new product that we, or a new brand that we haven't rated, how can you be the most informed consumer and the most confident consumer in making a decision about buying it? So something we think about is like, okay, say you're making a clothing purchase. It's really helpful to know that, you know, the majority of clothing emissions comes from materials and manufacturing. So looking at what the clothing is made of is really important. And if it required new materials, which is why thrifting can be so powerful, because you avoid the new materials part of the emissions of that product. So how do we cut down on the materials and manufacturing impact is like over 70% of the impact of a clothing purchase. Something like use, actually, the use phase is the second biggest. So do I get to wash this at home in my machine instead of dry cleaning it? How long will it last me? Will my use phase last for a really long time? Can I use this for 10 years? Am I going to wear it all the time? Then it's totally worth buying. If it's something I'm going to wear once and throw away, probably not. And then thinking about packaging and distribution is actually a pretty small part of it. It's helpful when the company is shipping it to you in a compostable wrapper, but that's like less than 10%. Probably, maybe even less than 5% of the emissions of that product. And then thinking about end-of-life use is also really important. So the breakdown and decomposition of that product after I use it, thinking about, do I donate it somewhere that I'm confident it's not going into landfill? Can I reuse it in some way? Can I give it to someone else? So those are like, I think it's really important in your crayon example. It's like, what is this even made of? That's actually the majority of the impact of that product is what the crayon is made of. And then there's all sorts of other things. How it's manufactured is also pretty important, but not as much as the materials. So we're really hoping that through presenting these sort of even frameworks of thinking about it will help consumers make more confident choices.
So just like being a marketer, I guess my question then goes to your customers, because obviously, you know, you and I, We care about this stuff. We think about this stuff, and it's not to say that the bulk of people don't, but probably not to this type of degree. And so, how have you seen your kind of user base, and have you seen that change from, you know, your early? It's kind of like in the tech world too, right? You have your early adopters, people that are like anything that's interesting and technology forward. They're like, yep, I'll do that. And so here I would say, you know, is your user base largely people that, you know, they already care about the environment? They're really focused on this, and has that changed at all? And maybe that's not true, but has that user base changed for you to be a bit more, broad, a bit more open, a bit more kind of outside of what would you say is somebody that like kind of really cares about these items and choices?
Absolutely. Yeah, we would definitely say that our audience has changed, especially over the last year as we've grown significantly and sort of expanded the type of people we're working with. And, you know, while initially we had people who were really interested and motivated by the data, I think what we're learning is that most people don't have a lot of time or brain space to think about the data themselves. They want to know that someone's done that and it's rigorous, but they want to know the answer. Like, where should I buy this? Or how do I buy this better than I could have otherwise? And does it save me money? Or how can I earn money by doing that? So that's definitely a different sort of information hierarchy. People are busy. We have a lot of young people who are building their lives for the first time. They might have moved out of their parents' homes and are making a lot of spending decisions for themselves at first. We also have people who are parents who are busy and are concerned about the future of their children and are making a lot of purchasing choices for their household and also want to know, how do I buy this thing but better? So it's definitely changed the way that we present information. And it's also changed some of the things we're working on now. So for instance, one of the things we're working on now is trying to help people enter a purchase they're thinking of making or they're planning to make soon, and giving them guidance on it instead of only giving them feedback on purchases they've already made. Because obviously the nature of a financial tracking app is that we get to see data about the past, but we don't get to see data about the future. So we're building sort of new tools and approaches that help people look that up. We're also building out a lot of content on social media and through our blog, which tend to be where people are looking for information about where to shop. Our Instagram has become a place where people really engage with us, and we're really using that intentionally. So we're trying to share bite-sized information now that's a lot more targeted to the types of choices people are making every day, whether that's food choices, what I should buy, when I need to buy new clothes, things like beauty and cleaning supplies, things that are sort of frequently coming up for people.
We're talking a lot about sustainability, but as a business, you have to think about revenue and profit to be sustainable as well. What has been the business model now that's been working for you, and has that kind of evolved over time?
This is definitely another area that's been evolving as our user base has changed. Initially, I mentioned our early adopters who were looking for this more data-driven approach. We're also looking for a very high-quality way to feel confident that they could offset the emissions that they couldn't avoid. And especially those early adopters were new enough about the space to be skeptical of offsets, because we know projects that are supposed to be drawing down carbon around the world are not perfect. And there's no such thing as a magic carbon eraser. Forestry projects can be great. They can also be unreliable. So we developed a subscription to offsets where we were doing a lot of the vetting and evaluation with our own expert team and partnering with others to make sure that we were offering our users peace of mind with the highest impact offsets they could buy into. So we developed a portfolio of high quality carbon projects that people buy into and still do for a price of $35 a ton. And that's a monthly subscription that people can opt into, and we take a 20% fee for evaluating those and sharing impact reports on a regular basis with our users. So that was our original business model, was giving people access to a way to address their emissions in a way that was trustworthy and automated. Now with the sort of new user base we're working with and helping them make more sustainable spending choices, it opens up a different kind of potential revenue opportunity. Now we're really starting to direct people to change the way they spend money, ideally from things that are less sustainable to more sustainable. And so now we're starting to work with brands to see if we can help those brands get new customers and earn revenue when we do.
Yeah, and that's a really smart model, because that will in turn probably allow you to have more revenue per app user, which in turn allows you to probably acquire more app users from doing so, because obviously that will increase the average value of a customer for you.
Yeah, and I think what's also really interesting is that it really aligns with our impact model of moving from a world in which this is the consumer's responsibility to pay for their offsets to a world in which we're really telling brands that this is an opportunity for you to really shift your behavior and then get more customers as a result.
So when you think about kind of the next 3 to 5 years, kind of big picture thinking and planning, where do you see Commons going, and what kind of direction, and kind of where are you going to be investing in?
I'm so excited about the opportunity to serve this sort of new consumer. I think consumers are getting increasingly savvy and excited about supporting brands that that they believe in, and skeptical of companies that say they're going to do the right thing, but then show that they're not doing it. So I'm super excited about our opportunity to help people build the type of lifestyle they want to have and sort of define a new consumer. Maybe even the word consume is kind of old fashioned. I feel like modern consumers think of ourselves as supporters of brands or users of products, but not necessarily like people who are consuming and destroying resources. And that's not the goal. So I'm really excited to help people build the lifestyles they want to build, get the things they need for the way that they want to live, for the way that brings them joy and also sustains the earth. And so I think we'll be trying to become the place where people go when they need to get something for their lifestyle, and to help them build their life with the products they need and the services they need, while also holding companies accountable for building the economy they want to live in.
Yeah, it's incredibly well said, and I think that when you think about all these, you know, your open arm in terms of, you know, people having to have a sustainable lifestyle, you're kind of really educating them in a trusting way, and I fully agree. Like you can start to you're really starting to feel now the skepticism over fast fashion, and you know, brands that are saying one thing and doing another, and brands that are trying to do the good thing. So if you can kind of see these two things kind of colliding, and common seems to kind of sit there really, really nicely, and it's really, really exciting to hear. Kind of as we,
I was just going to say, like, if we're successful, I would imagine, like, you know, when you need something, instead of typing it into your Amazon browser, maybe you'll type it into Commons and, you know, you'll say, I need new jeans. And instead of popping up with, you know, 50 pairs of jeans from various companies that you have, you know, different levels of confidence in, instead you'll find like, oh, I could buy this like incredibly beautiful pair of jeans from someone two blocks away on my Buy Nothing group, or I could buy it from a brand that's truly invented a new regenerative material that's replacing denim. Or I could learn how to mend, and I just got like a 50% coupon off of a really cool online mending class that I was kind of interested in, mending my favorite jeans anyway. So hoping that kind of future is something we can bring about.
As we kind of just wrap up, and you know, your journey to building Commons from, you know, an Excel spreadsheet to building an app company, which, you know, it takes a lot of work and effort to build a really, really powerful app, and then to get somebody to actually install it and use it is another thing, and you've been able to achieve that. What would you say to kind of entrepreneurs that are sitting in the background right now kind of thinking, you know, this is a market that we've been thinking about getting into. I want to build a startup in kind of the climate sustainability space. What would you say to them about maybe getting started?
I absolutely think that they can do it. I mean, from my perspective, I've never worked in the tech industry before. I'd never worked with an engineer before building this product. But I think what made it possible for me was really understanding the problem I was trying to solve and feeling extremely passionate about the person I was trying to solve it for, because it was something I'd felt myself as a pain point. I think that's the thing that really allows an entrepreneur to keep working on a product. You know, there's been so many times in the last 4 years that it's felt like I should give up, or this was going to be too hard. But the thing that always kept me going was thinking about that's the problem that I'm trying to solve. And if I did just even one or two user interviews that week, I would get some fresh motivation being like, okay, there are people out there who are really looking for this. And if I can build this just to help them, then it will keep me going. And I think that the best entrepreneurs really feel the pain of their users and are really motivated to solve it. So I think if that's you, if you have a problem you're really passionate about solving, you're absolutely the right person to try to come up with a solution.
Thank you so much for joining us. Where can people learn more about Commons, or, you know, find out about more about yourself and connect?
You can check out our website at thecommons.earth. You can find us on the App Store and Play Store if you search for Commons. And you can also find us on Instagram at Commons Earth.
Thanks so much for joining us.
I forgot to say, check out our new podcast, Second Nature, as well.
Yes, please do. And their website is really, really, really great in terms of content. So thank you so much again for joining us. And yeah, we wish you luck as you, you know, continue on this journey.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Someone Like You. We're a new podcast, and I would love if you can do a few things. One, please share the podcast with a friend, family member, work colleague, anybody that you can think of that would enjoy learning more about these incredible brands. Please also support these type of companies. They're doing the hard thing, and the hard thing often takes a lot of people to get on board. And don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. I'm Marco Pimentel. Thank you for joining us today. For more information on Someone Like You, you can find us on Instagram at Someone Like You Podcast, with all the links to the podcast, our website, and more information about the brands that we feature. Thank you again.